All right, man, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 672. This is the follow-up from the previous Fortune to Saint Germain episode where subscribers submitted questions, and we have quite a few questions. Fortune will be answering those. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a very pleasant good morning.
Anything you want to add before I bring the count, or actually the marquee, in?
Well, there are a lot of interesting topics that people asked about, so I'm looking forward to see what Fortune has to say.
All right, using my English vocabulary, here is His Excellency, the Marquis Fortune de Saint Germain. Welcome, Fortune.
From the Golden Castle at the end of the world where the rainbow begins, I welcome you, my friends, to the alchemical laboratory where the battles of time and space are fought and won. Help is not on the way. Help is already here. But before we begin, the meditation disc, the link will be posted in the advertisement for this episode. So the meditation disc is ready to go. So there we are. Any questions, my young friends?
Jason, we have a lot of questions to get through. Is there anything you want to bring up with Fortune before we start heading towards the submitted questions?
Nope. I am ready to begin, Your Excellency.
We begin with the great invocation. Now, as we say this together, you can all repeat after me because this is a meditation mantra. And we breathe in through the root and the crown, mixing it in the heart. And when we are finished and we do the Om, we bless Mother Earth and all life. So the minute we finish and you hear me start with the Om, you can do this along with me. And we're all going to start this part of the meditation together. To the Supreme God, thank you, thank you, thank you for your priceless, eternal and infinite blessings and gifts. This is what it is and infinitely more. We bless Mother Earth and all life with the greatest blessings of all infinity. Om. That's more of a Tibetan lower Om for anyone interested. Okay, repeat with me, and then when we finish, we do the Om together again on this meditation mantra. Divine Mother, Father, I surrender in aspiring love, joy, and faith. I love my karma and my fate. I bless Mother Earth and all life with divine love, joy, and faith. Om. Now, as we begin, for you, dear friends, dear students, there is no original sin, only original blessing. We've never left Eden. There is no fallen in the universe, only the arisen. Therefore, the fallen angels are allegory and stories, for angels have no free will. Therefore, an angel can never rebel against God or fall from grace. There is no war or discord in heaven, only here where we are. The bad news is, this is the darkest time since right before the destruction of Atlantis, and events are happening very quickly and are speeding up even more. Reaction to action happens very quickly. Therefore, this is no time for arguing or fighting, and I must stress that. This is the time for cooperation, not competition. So cooperation and collectivism voluntary way. So we focus. It's very important at this time to focus on true joy. That means things that make you truly joyful in a spiritual soul way, and gratitude, because the glass is always half full. Now, there is a new energy coming in, which is one of spring and joyous rebirth. So work with that new energy. And I strongly feel that that is related to the golden ray that hit the planet at 4:50 a.m. on the 24th of December, 2012, which I told you that I knew was coming and I had felt. And only a handful of people felt that at that time. So if everyone pulls in the same direction at the same time, We have heaven on earth in less than one afternoon. Let's hear the questions, dear friends.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Fortune. Appreciated. Jason, I'm just going to give it to you. Let's jump in. Here is question number one. And I guess we can fix this if I'm wrong. I think these questions were collected from episode 664. Let me check real quick. Yes, we collected the questions from episode 664. And there it is, Jason.
When visualizing colors, chakras, or tornado imagery during meditation, what exactly should people be doing mentally and visually, and why do these methods work?
The methods work because, well, everyone's in meditation. So meditation means the moment. So we're all in meditation, whether we know it or not. Madonna was wrong. She said we're living in a material world. We're all living in a spiritual world. So every moment that you're living, whether you know it or not, in physicality is also a moment of spirituality. Your meditative moments, when you obsess about a thought, that's meditation in itself. Now, second level meditation is when you sit and you actually clear your mind and you're focusing on something that is in line with the divine. So the most important thing is not color or light, but your intent, that you are in your body, meaning you're in your heart and soul, in a quiet area, a candle and incense always help, and making that magic moment, because remember, meditation is the moment and the moment is infinity. So the deeper you can get into yourself and the moment, the deeper you are in communion with the divine and eternity. If you know the actual colors, which we are going to discuss at the seminar in April, that's even better, because then you can combine that and the colors actually accompany sound. Remember, in the higher dimensions, six and above, six is the Buddhic plane, the light and sound are one. They are not separate.
All right, this next question will bleed right into what you just talked about, Fortune. Go ahead, Jason.
How important are the exact words, colors, and sequences used in prayers or meditation compared to overall intent?
The intent and the faith. The faith is a very big part. And if you throw in joy, so whatever your intent is at that moment, thrown in with joy, which is, you know, the rapturous moment, and the faith thrown in, that is what begins what, I don't like to use the term magic, but that is what begins the miracle. Humility, peace, and patience as well, all thrown in that moment. So we say that the most out of the way house of prayer, the poorest and most out of the way house of prayer in the poorest town made by the meekest people is where the greatest prayers occur. But the greatest prayer can occur. Remember, all moments are holy and all places are perfect. And all places are perfect and all moments are holy. So we meditate wherever we are. We get down into our humble selves, which is your soul. Peace and patience when you put the rest of the universe, the crazy world we live in where everyone's pulling in a different direction around us. You turn the lights off and you go into that little magic space, your heart and soul, the little child within you. And you just make the prayer with the intent and faith and joy from a point of humility. And there's your magical formula.
So, Fortune, is it safe to say as a novice getting into this, the intent is really the most important thing, and getting words, colors, and sequences exact become more important as you gain experience? Is that a safe way to put it?
Well, the intent is what puts you on the spiritual path. Before you know anything and you say to yourself, something says to yourself, perhaps one day something goes wrong in your life and it just clicks in you and you say, I'm doing everything wrong. And you meet a guru, well, there is the intent in itself that is in that one moment life-changing that puts you from, you know, selfish man to divine, selfless student, you know. There's service to self and service to others in this world. So when we get on the meditative path, the spiritual path, that is all about service to others. So the moment you step on the path and you start on the beam, you're already on the way to service to others.
It's all you, Jason.
When breathing energy through the crown and root chakras, should the visualization be constant or synchronized with breathing rhythm? How long should these practices be performed?
As long as you need to breathe in the way that you need. It mixes in the heart, and then we bless Mother Earth and all life as we exhale on the Om. So, and remember, here's another technique. No matter what the colors you're breathing in through the root and the crown are, when you mix in the heart, focus on gold. When you bring that into the heart, focus on gold, and then you breathe out on the Om. And like we said at the seminar, the workshop in April, we're going to discuss all of the colors. And you do it as long as you need to breathe in and as long as you need to breathe out. And your own soul and the speed at which your vessel is moving at that time will determine how long you need to breathe in and how long you need to breathe out.
So the main thrust of that question, Fortune, was should the visualization be constant or in sync with the breathing rhythm?
The visualization is always good. The intent is number one. And if you can put that to a picture, that's great. And then if you can align that with color, that is great as well. And then as you become more spiritually advanced and you move down the road and know the techniques more, they will become easier where you can integrate all of them at the same time.
Is it necessary to completely still the mind before meditation? And what is the best way for beginners to accomplish this?
The best way to get your mind prepared, actually the best time to meditate is the first in the morning, because when you wake up with the day, so if you can wake up with the day and the sunrise, that's the best time to actually meditate. And for beginners, make a very special place in your house for this, a little corner. Some people have their Buddhist corner or their little Hindu ashram corner. The rosary is meditation in a Catholic way. So if you have to go to church, but incense, candle, a nice little special corner somewhere. If you want to meditate lying down, I meditate lying down. You can meditate in the lotus position. You can meditate on a chair. It's really up to you, whatever is more comfortable for you, but turn out all of the lights, all of the electricity, the candle, something, incense, oil, even a little bit of perfume, because you want to make that time, that moment as hospitable as you can for yourself and that time in the second level meditation, because they said we're all in meditation, we're always thinking about something. But then again, there are some people out there, like one of the greatest teachers to grace our world, Jesus, was in meditation all of the time, the Buddha and other people. They became one with meditation and meditation was one with them. But then again, just to say, you make that moment as hospitable and joyous for yourself as you can in that moment of meditation. But we're supposed to make every moment as hospitable and joyous for ourselves and others in every moment of our lives.
Why do some people easily visualize certain colors, like blue or purple, but struggle with others?
We all have a base color that we came in on, and one of the chakra colors. So it might be easier for some of us, or many of us, to visualize the colors that are more in tune with our base color that we came in. So for our friends here listening, Fortuné de Saint-Germain, Fortuné is my name in French. That's how you really pronounce it, Fortune in English. So just like the original alchemist 9 generations back, and I am not the same person as 9 generations back, okay? That he and I are same name, same birth date, same family, but not the same person. So Saint Germain was of the violet ray, and I have come in on the violet ray. So my base color is violet. And then again, other people come in with more abilities. We all have one of the three: clairaudient, clairvoyant, and clairsentient. So the more you meditate and the more your spirit grows and the more you become in line with oneness, these parts of our being and your true gifts will come, and your psychic abilities will unfold and become even greater, and you will realize the psychic abilities that you were born with or came in with to develop. So there are some rare people who are born clairaudient, clairsentient, and clairvoyant. And those people that do have all of that, they have to make adjustments to live in the modern world, because sometimes they're just too sensitive to be around crowds or many, many other people. So there are many reasons why some see this and some don't see that. And then there have been great success stories where some very toxic students signed up and they couldn't, they were the least spiritual people and the most toxic people. And something just happened in their life where they wanted to learn meditation and be spiritual. And these people who realized none of this before had developed the most amazing healing and meditative powers.
So Fortune, you and I have talked a number of times about how we met. And actually, I think I've misspoken in the past because I thought that it was recorded in an episode, but Rose has searched and searched. So setting that aside, but I never told you this. The day we met, I had gone down to the beach after we met, and it was low tide. And on the edge of the water, I found this acrylic diamond, not plastic, like a hard acrylic, but like a diamond looks after it's been cut. And it was violet. And I picked it up, put it in my pocket. It's been on my desk ever since. And to put a frame around it, when you see the episodes that Fortune is on, that's the color, well, as close as I can come digitally to the violet. But I've never told you that, have I, that I found that acrylic violet diamond that day?
No, no.
I'll take a picture of it and I'll send it to you.
Well, just to go over the comedy, and truth is stranger than fiction, and comedy is always greater than tragedy. So to refresh everyone, it basically came across this way. If there's a real live alchemist out there, contact us and let us know. We'd like to speak with you. So that is the way we have come in contact with each other. And as far as the diamond, diamonds are multifaceted. They have the ray of eternity and infinity in them. And that by finding the diamond, I'm glad you brought that up, that's the way the universe speaks to us. It speaks to us not in voice. So when the divine speaks to you, it's speaking to you in light, in color, in moments. Sometime a person may come up to you and just say something to you, and it registers, because that is the way the divine speaks to you. Now, we all know, because I brought this message to you from Mother Mary of April 2021, when I was waiting for a friend in the police station, Mother Mary came down, and I told you her message was, and she was in human form, and the message was, we will one day live in a world, a pre-industrial world, where people will once again know how to relate and live with each other. So that's directly from Mother Mary's mouth. Now, we talk about messages, and this one I've never shared with anyone except one of my teachers. This was 2023 of June in the New York City subway. I walked into one of the cars, and there was Lady Nadia. For those of you who need to know who that is, she was an Atlantean teacher, and the goddess Pallas Athene, the Grecian goddess, is modeled after her. She was a wisdom teacher who defended the downtrodden. She worked in the legal professions on Atlantis. So if you see the goddess with the weights in her hands of justice, that is modeled after Lady Nadia. She was very thin. She was blonde. and she had two ponytails, and I knew it was her, and she spoke in a sing-song, but she knew which subway cars I was getting into and sat down next to me and sang in an angelic sing-song, and her message was, the signs are everywhere. So that was to me as a student. She felt that she had to come down and speak to me personally, and that is for all of us. The signs are everywhere. So when you are walking on the street, pay attention because you may see some light or colors. You may see a car pass you. So one day somebody called and asked, what did this mean? And a big black truck with the words, why fight it, was coming towards this man on the street. And he laughed at the words on somebody's big truck that said, why fight it? I said, well, that is a message for you from the universe, telling you not to fight yourself and not to fight the program.
So the next question is a very interesting one, and I have read numbers of ways people have tried to answer it, so I'm interested to hear how you answer it, Fortune. Go ahead, Jason.
Why do humans not remember past incarnations if reincarnation is part of spiritual development?
Edgar Cayce had this, and he said that this was actually a gift rather than a hindrance. Now, we are a shorter-lived race here in the universe, so we don't have much time here. Before the Atlantean flood, people did live longer, and the Atlanteans did live longer, but their DNA was different. Some of us do have memories, but it's a fresh start. So it's not actually a loss or a punishment. It's beware of the Gnostic Gospels, because they are also stories and allegory. So be very, very careful about the story about the memory wipe, and it's a punishment, and it's designed as a hindrance. Edgar Cayce said in his readings while he was asleep, and he didn't know what he was saying till he woke up and read what the secretary had written while he was in trance. So it's actually a gift, because it is a fresh start. And one of the great blessings is that you're moving forward. So even though you may have had a disastrous lifetime in the past one, every time you reincarnate, you're moving forward. So it's part of the divine plan and the divine promise that you move forward each lifetime, even if you did incredibly bad and you fell. So we say, remember, there's no fallen, there are no mistakes, there is only the arisen. And what we also learn by making mistakes. So even if we make a mistake, it's still the right action, because that is something that we needed to learn from. So when we come back, time and space give us the illusion of separation. And time and space are one of the things that also aids in us not remembering from the past. But as some of my teachers had told me, when it's important for you to remember, you will remember.
What happens if someone chooses not to enter the light after death? Is returning to physical life still required?
Well, we have many choices, and we're going to discuss this in part two. When you pass away, there are seven realms. In seven realms, you have the possibility of going to, and other, you may find yourself in the void. When you die, you don't have to go anywhere. But when you pass on, where you go and what realm you find yourself in will be a reflection of your vibration. So as I've said before, you don't have to go anywhere. But before you pass on, and you know these things, if you find yourself in a realm which some people see as hell, and they come back and they saw a realm of chaos and mass confusion, that was a realm they found themselves in, because that is a reflection of them and their inner selves. It was showing them what their life is, such as someone finishes their mission here and you've achieved your mastership, you've transmitted over 50% of your karma, and you've mastered time and space. Basically, you have become an ascending master. You automatically find yourself in the sixth dimension. And there's a dimension below that where there is not, they have not reached the sixth dimension, but they were souls that lived their life in service to others. that you would basically call the first dimension of the heavenly planes, which is a higher form of the fifth dimension. So when most people pass away, you're going to the fifth. So if you are one of those people that lived riotous living and you were out for yourselves and you couldn't wait to hoodwink and take advantage of the next person, and you have a near-death experience and you go into that realm of chaos, it's not a punishment. It's just showing you where you were in this life. So where you go and the realm you venture into when you pass on is a reflection of what your vibration and you cultivated here on Earth is. But in part two, we're going to have a very, very in-depth discussion on that exact question, my friend.
Do souls reunite with loved ones after death? And do souls travel repeatedly with the same spiritual partners?
Yes and no. That choice is up to you. You know, basically, most of the people in your life today you've known from other places in past lives and future lives, because time is not linear. It's, first of all, time is an illusion, so that everything that is happening right now in your lifetime, all of the events in the universe, past, present, or future, are, they say, happening at the very same time. That's part of the mystery of life and creation. So you've not only lived in the past, but you've lived in the future. And you have brought back elements into this lifetime and are meeting souls that you knew. The moment you meet somebody and you've never met that person before, and you feel like you know them and you can't live without them, that is a very telling sign that you had spent another life with that person. And don't think because you knew someone in a past life and you know them in this life that the past life might have been so great. So one of the things that the great gurus say is that your soulmate is not necessarily the person that you love and can't be without. Your soulmate is often the person that you might hate the most in your life, because those are your greatest teachers. That's where you have your greatest lessons and homework to do. So yes and no, each lifetime we incarnate, we meet so many different souls that we knew from other lifetimes, past, present, and future. And sometimes, many times, you know, you do. Jesus's trek through the universe was with Mary Magdalene. They spent many, she was his twin flame. So they spent many times in other dimensions and other planes and other spheres of existence in their incarnations and their travels throughout time and the various dimensions. And as I point that out, Jesus was an avatar. He came from a higher dimension. He's known as Sananda in the higher dimensions. And he was in Atlantis, and he was in the planet Arcturia, which was where the veil between dimensions is thinnest. And our planet Earth seems very, very hard and is a hard classroom, because this is one of the planets or planes, as we say, planet being little plane or spheres, realms where density is the thickest. So our Earth may even be the realm where density is the thickest in this universe. And that's why it seems so hard for us.
Is there truth to the concept of a treasury of souls or similar metaphysical holding place before incarnation?
That comes from the Hebrew, the guf, which means body. And that is allegory. The whole creation is a treasury of souls, which, by the way, your soul looks like a diamond of light, so with infinite rays. So that's how the angels and the ascended and higher beings like Lord Maitreya, Vishnu, these are people way... These are beings and universal attuners that are above, way above sixth dimension. Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, Lord Maitreya, these are higher deities beyond. Remember, the whole universe is infinite, so it's higher and lower gods. and there is a supreme God, but the whole universe and all of the dimension are a treasury and endless hallway of various types of soul.
What are spiritual or psychological explanations for hearing knocking, rapping sounds, or other sensory experiences during or after meditation?
Depends how attuned you are and what you will hear. Some of them are messages. Some of them may be, you know, we have contact. Some of them, you know, come from our higher self or other parts of ourselves. So very, very highly attuned people who have been meditating and they develop their senses. As we said, the three ones, clairaudio, clairvoyant, and clairsentient, they can recognize where it's coming from, whether it's coming from your ego, whether it's coming from your higher self, whether it's coming from an angel, whether it's coming from an ascended master, or whether it is... Sometimes these things are coming from other beings that may be in your home or passing through an entity that you may have picked up. So sometimes when you hear voices in your head, it's you've picked up an attachment, living negative energy that is a thought form that was created by somebody's negative thought. And when we also do the course in April, I'm going to do some cleansings on people. So if you are one of the people that feels that you have been targeted by dark forces or somebody that has put a whammy on you, and that does exist. But when you're on the spiritual path, the higher you go, the more immune you are to that. So there's a certain point where nobody can touch you. Who God has blessed may no man curse. But these are just things that are showing you that you are spiritually attuned. And where they come from can be anything. It could be a spirit that has passed on. When you get out of meditation and you're really in that deep moment, sometimes you're not really leaving it. And you come out of meditation and your just spirit is so open, you can be open to hearing and seeing anything.
Why do some people rarely or never recall dreams? And can dream recall be improved through spiritual or physical practices?
If the dream is important, you will remember it. And also remember, our souls travel while we are asleep. So if it's really important, you will remember it. And if someone's invading your dream, you know, some if you've picked up an attachment, sometimes you will have those thoughts in your dream. And when, like we said, the more spiritually in tune you are, with your subconscious, well, the more spiritually you grow, the more integrated your whole being is to the one in the light. So the more you will remember. And that's all I can give you on it. It just depends how in tune you are with your inner self, with your soul, your heart and soul again.
You know, I have two or three books on dream meditation. Anyone who's truly interested in this, there are some very good books on this. And actually, in two of them, it addresses that if you simply focus and practice, if you never remember, you can begin to change that. But I would suggest getting some books on it. There's quite a number of good ones out there.
Well, since we're talking about this, we're doing these are, remember, we deal as fellow alchemists and student alchemists. We deal in alchemy, infinity, and miracles. That's what the universe is made up of. So, you know, miracles are par for the course. They happen every day. The age of miracles is infinite. It's eternity. It's here with us right now. So when we sleep, those of you who have said you see me in your dreams or I work on you, that's true, but I don't remember it. My soul is traveling, and some of you have called out to the universe. So when I heard the call in sleep and you saw me working on you, yes, that does happen. But I mostly don't remember it. One night I saw my grandparents. I saw their home and the door was open. And they had passed away a while, many years. And I went through that door, which was their home in the dream. But that door was the door to the fifth dimension. And when my grandfather saw me walk in, it was his soul And he was in between incarnations. And he said, how did you get here? What are you doing here? And the look on him was totally aghast. So the more energy you have in your chakras, you'll even be able to go into those higher dimensions. Time travel and sleep. This was a few years ago. I wound up in the 1970s physically. I was in my dream, but I was in the 1970s disco dancing. And I was riding over the 59th Street Bridge in one of those old cars, like a Sedan DeVille Cadillac. And it was sometime around 74, 75. And I was at some sort of a dance. And I said, let's all go to Studio 54 and just dance there. And then I recalled, because I was actually physically in that time, and I had a body, and these people saw me. And they said, what's that? And it occurred to me that there was no Studio 54 yet in 1975. And then another time that I was physically traveling, I was in physical body somewhere else in this world. And they, as I was leaving, I was actually in my physical body, but I was sleeping. I was in another part of this world on a beach. And I was actually lifting off the ground, and these people saw it and they said, can you tell us anything? What can you leave us with? And from my soul, I called down to them as I was floating off. And I said, love God with all your heart, serve selflessly, and be all you can be. So that was the universe and my soul giving us the credo of the third dimension. Next question.
That was the first thing you taught me, Fortune, after we met. Go ahead, Jason.
What is the nature of hearing or sensing what people describe as a divine voice, and how rare is this phenomenon?
Well, the divine voice that you're going to hear, angels will speak to you in light and sound, and you can even hear them giggling, okay? The sound, this is very, very rare. Now, there are some people, they do exist on this planet, and sometimes even people who don't have that ability normally, you will hear the sound of the masters. When you hear voice speak to you, and you actually hear the voice, that's very rare, but that will be an ascending master. It could be El Moria, Saint Germain. As far as I can see, there are about 150,000 ascended masters that watch over the planet or our realm in the sixth dimension from all different sorts of time frames, because there is no time in the sixth dimension. So the guardians of the planets, Sanat Kumara and Lady Venus, it's possible. And there are also some people out there that are gifted and talented channelers that when they actually sit down with you and do a reading, they will actually hear the voice. And some of them, when they are open and they are channeling, the voice can actually come through them and you may hear it at that moment, the voice of the master himself.
Are pendulums or similar divination tools safe? And what might actually be interacting through them?
Just we say, nothing is bad or good, but how man uses it. So, it depends what you're using it for, and it depends how in tune you are. And just use it. There was the water wizard. This man went around with the stick like you used to see. I think he was Hungarian. He could find pure water. Deborah Tavares wrote a lot about him. He passed away, but he could divine where prime water, pure water was coming up from the earth. So yes, if you're doing anything with a good intent, you know, you can use any form of instrument. A knife can be used to kill, just as it can be used to open you up on an operation and heal you and pull something out that needed to be taken out.
Intention is a big deal.
Look, the internet is not bad or good. The internet is 1,000 times more powerful than the great library at Alexandria, whose loss we will never, ever recover from, because there was so much there that we lost. And that went back thousands of years before the library itself. And that even though it was a Greek library, everything was copied into Greek, but they had records from Sumeria, ancient Babylon, and way, way back before the reign of the kings in Egypt. They even said that they had records of two times when the sun had risen in the west and set in the east. So take that for whatever you want it to mean. But the internet, like anything, use it for something good. Use it for research. Use it to bring the world closer together. What the internet has actually wound up doing, and not at its fault, because it has, it's either good or bad the way you use it, it's wound up separating people. As I've talked about, at this time, we need to go back to core basic values in order for people to make it through this, because the inflation is going to continue. Your purchasing power, you know, shrinkflation, you're paying more for less. You're going to have to band together and work collectively. And before World War II, in all societies, before World War II, for all of the history of humanity, people had communal collective living. Even in the great Roman domuses, the palaces that the rich lived in, it was transgenerational. And you passed your home down, and the grandparents lived there, and they were sages and teachers to the grandchildren. So let us remember what we have forgotten. Pre-World War II, you worked till you died, or you worked till you got sick. There was no retirement. The American dream is all a post-World War II invention. And only because of certain anomalies and factors that all came together at that time. And then when the other countries started coming online, like Japan and Germany in the late 60s, early 70s, you saw that the good times started slowing down. So those years are never coming back, because the factors that created them don't exist anymore. So here is where we are, like it or not. But this is what we're going to have to do. So remember Mother Mary's message, a world where people will know how to live with each other and relate to each other again, a pre-industrial world. A warning, danger, Will Robinson. Don't cling on to your possessions. If you have to scale down and move in with others and family and friends, you're not taking a loss there. You're actually reconnecting with the way we were supposed to live. The Amish live in a communal way. It's a voluntary religious community. The Shakers lived in that way. The people that are going to make it through this with ease will be the people that band together and help each other like they did in the Depression. United we stand, divided we fall.
Are biblical events meant to be interpreted literally, symbolically, or as inner spiritual allegories?
Well, they are all metaphor. Some of them were real, like the great flood. So we know from Noah, and the Sumerians and the Babylonians gave him different names, but everybody has the flood. 22,500 BC, Edgar Cayce gave the date. That was the flood. And the great flood that we all know, and like it said, that after that flood, people no longer lived the 1,000 years that they used to live. So when we talk about the pre-flood, the antediluvian world, there is a great deal of truth in that and what happened. Now, there were three large destructions, three phases of destruction for Atlantis. The 22,500 flood was the big flood that we know. The last one in Atlantis, which was about, as far as I can see, about 13,000 years ago, 11,000 BC, that was brought about by their misuse of the stone, the two-eye stone, which was given to them by the Pleiadians, and they misused that. But those were the children of Belial, and they were a demonic cult. They were worshiping the dark. Their power grew too great. They misused it. They didn't understand what they were dealing with, and they thought they could handle it. So many of the things that you know, like Moses parting the Red Sea, the Jews were actually the Hyksos people. Josephus Flavius says that. He was the Roman historian, and he was a Jew, and he said they were the Hyksos people. So when Moses was leading them out, there was great truth in that. The sea did recede at that time. It wasn't called the Red Sea, it was called the Sea of Reeds. So there's a great deal of truth in much of this. And there's also metaphor as well. So my young dear friends out there, and all of you are young, because the spirit is eternally young. Moses, when your back is up against the wall, if your faith is great enough, if you have the right intent and it's made with a pure of heart prayer, there will always be a way made through. So that was the miracle there. But that's also the metaphor. Fishes and loaves, reaching into the bag and pulling out food and drink where there is none. Many of us work that miracle various ways. The Buddha worked the same miracle. He reached into his beggar's bag and pulled out cake and drink when there was nothing in the bag. So it's the same miracle. C.B. Still, as we talked about, Buddha works the same miracle. And then once he works the miracle like Jesus did, the man who stilled the sea, who calmed the water, the Buddha walks out of the boat and walks on water, just as Jesus did. Walking on water is rising above the fray. The crucifixion is what happens to us many times a day, especially those of us who go and work with many other people in a large city. Many of us are nailed to the cross at work daily. But we focus on the resurrection, my friends, not the crucifixion. I'll see you for part two.
All right. Well, that was a big hour. Lots of information and a big announcement up front. Jason, do you want to mention anything for the tail end of hour one here?
That was indeed a great first hour, and I'm looking forward to hour two.
All right. I'm going to wrap up hour one. And for all the folks out there listening, Fortune made some pretty big announcements in the beginning of this hour. If you didn't quite get it, or you're confused, or you need more information, you can ping us. Rose is always here. I am always here. Just shoot us off a contact from the website or bump into us in a chat, whatever it is, and we will give you the information you need. The links for the CD and other things will be provided in the description and maybe other places as well. With that, this has been hour one of episode 672. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. Members get access to all the forums, comments, and they get access to Shoot the Moon for free as a member. You get access to all the solar work that I'm about to pick up again, hopefully in early March. And that's exclusive access. With that, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back for hour two, where Fortune will continue with the submitted questions. And I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
the enemy of knowing.